As you may know, we are always now on the roundtable having this roundtable on the roundtable, which is a wonderful way to have an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. So we welcome you to our Tuesday, March 26th edition, and thank you for joining us. We welcome you, as always, to email us roundtable at wamc.org, and you can also use a social media
thing.
Yes, version Organ. Of your choice. Yay. There you go. You can comment on our webpage. You can go to Facebook, or you can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. So all of those choices are yours. We have a wonderful panel. First and foremost, WAMC's Alan Chartok is back. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph. It was a wonderful trip to New Orleans.
Excellent. Newsman Ray Graff is here, and he's adjusting his headphones, but in a moment you will be able to hear his voice.
Hello.
There you go. See? He didn't make a liar out of me. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, our dear friend, is here as well. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to everyone.
Thank you very much for joining us. So we have some really cool stories to talk about today, some really interesting things, all complicated and such. Before we get into those, what's on the front pages of the Times Union we should be aware about today, Mike?
You know, we have a good follow-up today to the story about the Albany police doing a sort of a SWAT team practice exercise last week at the city public housing complex, the Ida Yarborough Homes, that frightened a lot of people. People were not properly warned that the police were going to be there. And, you know, as the momentum built over the weekend, people were posting photos of cops with guns and armor, you know, in their neighborhood and were complaining that the police caused a lot of stress. So they had a public meeting last night. The police deputy police chief came and listened, and people did complain, and they talked about how traumatized they were. Some people weren't allowed to leave their apartments during this. Although the police were using blanks, there were loud explosions, and there was, a lot of commotion. So now the police department has apologized. They defend the need to do these kinds of practices. They say it saves lives. It helps them when they get in situations like that. But they will communicate a whole lot better in the future, and they'll provide grief counselors if anybody wants it. And they said they're listening. And the chief over the weekend apologized and said it was insensitive to do it the way they did it. So
now I'm assuming they've done it in the past.
Yes, they have. And
has there been better communications?
I don't know why it didn't cause a problem so much in the past. And it might be because people are maybe even a little more sensitive, on edge about firearms, the sound of guns going off. Who knows? But they did band together to formally complain, and they're planning a protest tonight to, again, signal that they're upset. But the police department kind of acknowledged they messed up, and while they want to do this kind of thing in the future, they'll do it in a more appropriate way, maybe not so close to residences. These were empty apartments, but some people were living very close by.
You know, I remember, and I think this happens in communities across the region and across the country, where there will be a different there will be a different drill that will be taking place, whether it be for a fire company, for a police department, or for law enforcement, or for whatever the case may be, some sort of hazardous waste detection unit or something that will be coming in. And sometimes, like in our area where I live, a farmer will give up some of his property and say, hey, you can all come. Well, meanwhile, you see all the trucks, you're driving by, all the sirens are going, you see all the stuff, and you feel, oh, you know, my neighbor's house is burning down. That's awful, you know, and then you realize, oh no, it's only a drill, and it is a very strange feeling, but I'm also wondering is not keeping it secret, but is it not making it overly known part of the drill, and the fact of that because then you've changed the dynamic, and you don't have that part of like working through a normal environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know why that would be the case. I can't see why it wouldn't be beneficial just to have, you know, big electric signs, you know, like lighted signs saying police drill going on.
We're
going
to be shooting today.
Right. You know.
Well, they went door to door. Yeah. Beforehand, yes.
Well, they said they went and talked to some of the security people and some of the officials there, and they believed that the word was being filtered out. But evidently it wasn't. I mean, some people were just completely unaware of it. They thought they saw these military style police in their neighborhood. It was stressful, and you know, so as much as they're, you know, they did intend to notify, that didn't filter down, and you know, these people were generally upset and frightened, and now they're angry.
It was a very realistic simulation. You know, we have the scanners on in the newsroom, and it took a while to figure out, oh, okay, this is a drill.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty serious stuff.
Well, and in the television coverage, I thought that some of the most striking examples of those who were upset came from the parents and the impact that it had on their young children. Oh. And seeing, you know, all this going on in the neighborhood, it's like the aliens have landed, and it's a scary time. So, an interesting issue, and as you mentioned, that is on your website and in the paper today, a follow-up story. So it's timesunion.com. We want to talk about some other stuff. Let us begin with the Supreme Court making news today. Obviously, the Supreme Court is taking up one of the great civil rights issues of our day, the issue of talking about gay marriage. Two cases that they are going to be talking about. And I found this article in the LA Times, which I found interesting, which is right now, as we look at this as an issue, many are making the comparison to the issue of abortion, meaning what does this mean for the future of the court? Will this be an issue that, like abortion, is one that the court is constantly or regularly addressing, number one, and number two, that it has some legs as far as politically of who goes on the court to vote for this particular issue? And I was just interested in getting your reaction to that, Alan, as far as you think of what the impact of this momentous decision could be, not only short-term, but certainly long-term for the court.
Well, yes, exactly, Joe. Not only in terms of the substance of the issue, you know, should everybody have the same rights to be married, but also what it does to the court. They are very aware of what can happen if they make an unpopular decision, which they have certainly done in the past. And they are concerned about that. Clearly, Roberts voted on the Obamacare, the so-called Obamacare, or the Affordable Health Act, based on the fact that he knew there was going to be real trouble if the court didn't allow it to go forward. They would just be seen as a group of conservatives who were sitting there. The issue here is Kennedy or Kennedy. He's the deciding judge, and he is supposed to be a libertarian. So if he votes with the majority, with a liberal group on the court, then you could really have a desired outcome for those people who happen to want to see gay marriage or equality in marriage around the country. However, if he just reverts to his usual sort of I'm basically with them except for some small occasions, then it will go the other way.
One of the in this article, which is an opinion piece, is what it says is that much of this talk is focused on whether the court, if it is inclined to enshrine civil rights for gays, might issue a very narrow decision and say strike down the California gay marriage ban as unconstitutional, mm-hmm. and leave the decision about whether to legalize gay marriage to the states where it isn't legal yet. But as they point out, in the years since Roe versus Wade, where there has been great tumult in the court, there are many, including Justice Ginsburg, who have said that the court erred in 1973 and should have not made such a sweeping decision. So looking at that, is this a possibility? And how do you move forward without causing this tumult.
Well, you know that Judge Felix Frankfurter, one of the great justices in the history of the
Absolutely.
Court, said that the court should stay out of the political thicket. He did it on the gerrymandering cases, but he basically says we're not the legislature. The legislature is the legislature, either the state legislature or the Congress is. And I believe that may be what Justice Ginsburg was referring to, although I have to tell you, I certainly disagree with her. I think when you take a look at the premier decisions on the Warren Court, they were sweeping. They ended an awful lot of, dissent among various people. There was no room left. If you were poor, you got a lawyer, period, for example. And we have to note the passing of Anthony Lewis and Gideon's Trumpet, the author of Gideon's Trumpet and the New York Times reporter. I think when you start nitpicking, you get a different kind of result.
And the other issue, I guess, that could be made is when in the comparison to abortion as an issue for the court, you were talking about ending something. And then in here we're talking about really allowing a right and something for an entire segment of people, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, I agree with the columnist in the LA Times. I think her point was to counter Justice Ginsburg, who over the weekend made a lot of publicity when she said that that there was an error by the court in 1973 when they approved Roe versus Wade. They should have just done a very limited decision that affected Texas state law and not have it applicable across the country. That was too big a change and too much for people to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that suggesting that Ginsburg now might favor a more limited decision that would just deal with California's own situation and not have it be broad and sweeping across the country and like with one signature or one decision make marriage equality the law of the land. But I kind of agree with the columnist in the LA Times, Robin Abkarian, who says that it is very different. I mean, there are strong, you know, in many ways they're the same. There's strong religious beliefs about abortion and ethical beliefs about abortion, and there's also that about marriage equality and gay marriage. But it's just between two people when it's a marriage. It doesn't go beyond that. And it's a little bit of a rough comparison. You know, abortion is such a religious and ethical and medical kind of a decision. Marriage is it's an institution. If you think about it, I mean, it's kind of ironic. If you follow the logic that marriage is a union between a man and a woman and a woman, and one of the reasons is procreation, then any marriage between people in their late 50s would be illegal, you know, or
right. any sexual activity,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of absurd. I don't know how somebody else's marriage affects my marriage, and I don't know how it makes it worse.
I certainly agree with you. I think the one thing, I've gotten some mail on this from some jurists. These people are human beings. And if you come from a strong religious background and you read in Leviticus that man shall not lie with man, you know, and you believe that, if it's unfortunate, but if you believe that, it somehow finds a way to be rationalized in your decision making. And I'm going to predict that that's going to be the position, for example, of Justice Roberts. In what he does in this case. Those three guys are going to be the three guys no matter what happens. It's, again, Kennedy.
So what are you saying about Justice Roberts? How do you think he'll vote?
Oh, he'll vote opposing.
So he'll uphold Prop 8?
Yes.
Is what you're saying?
Yes. Thank you, Ray. That's exactly right.
I found the whole thing, the story coming out about Judge Roberts and his gay cousin who was going to be in the gallery during the hearing of the arguments, and the fact that that was made, that that was even announced, I found to be odd.
Except that it's huge. I mean, we see United States senators who have been adamantly opposed to this stuff. And then all of a sudden, it turns out that they have a gay son. And they say, okay, now my son is more important than my politics. I love that, by the way. I think it's terrific.
Well,
but it is personal.
But isn't it just that when people get to realize that people that they know and that they love and that they're friends and their family members, many of them, some of them are gay or lesbians, and, you know, it personalizes it. If you don't know somebody personally, it's easier for you to think there's something different about them that you don't like. But when you know someone well and it turns out that they happen to be gay or lesbian, you realize that that's just what it is.
Or if you're going to risk losing your son forever, if
right.
that's the case.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We will be back in a moment before our news break. You can email us, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Our roundtable on the roundtable will continue after this short break. Some fight broken out of the panel. Save it for the air. Save it for the air,
right.
Gentlemen. Welcome back to our roundtable on the roundtable. We welcome your input. Our panel, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. And I thank you very much for being with us. Are we done on this issue, or can we move on?
Well, what just happened here? Ray Graff said that the judges are supposed to be doing it based
on the Supreme Court, on the Constitution. Not worry about public opinion sitting in the audience.
Well, theoretically, he's correct.
I mean,
except
that's
those
job.
Of us have studied judicial behavior know that human beings, judges are human beings, and somehow their personal preferences end up being their philosophical preferences.
Well, you're thinking that Roberts is thinking not only about this decision, but about legacy and about public opinion.
Do we know how that news came out? As to his cousin entering the court,
I don't know.
Is that something whether it was found out or it just seemed like it was? It was interesting to me that seems to me to be a story that somewhere like day three you say, oh, interestingly enough,
it's an anecdote.
Yes,
I mean nothing more, nothing less. I would venture to say, and some people would object, that we all have cousins or friends or
relatives, including
or
Dick
children.
Cheney.
Yes, Dick Cheney. Right.
Cheney.
You know,
no,
it's Cheney. Cheney. He pronounces it Cheney. I keep trying to tell you people that,
fine.
But you don't believe me.
All right.
But I don't know what immediate relevance it has. Will it change the Supreme Court?
But I'm going with Alan on this in the sense of is it sending a signal? Is it sending some sort of sign? Is it if it was done post, I could understand it. The fact that it was announced. And the fact that it became an issue in the press, that it was widely released, is that some sort of signal? Is that
white smoke here? I mean, you know,
what's your point?
Hopefully, the Supreme Court does what it's supposed to do, and that is to look at it constitutionally.
Well, I agree with you entirely on that. But my question is then if this is then leaked by a justice of the Supreme Court, then is there something then that sort of takes away from that argument?
I don't know how that story came out or broke. You know, I don't know who was the source of that story, and not knowing that, it's only speculation. But if you were a reporter and you were covering the Supreme Court and you happened to have this major, major issue and you happen to learn through a phone call or someone emails you or drops a dime on you and you find out that that the chief judge of the Supreme Court, who has to lead the court through this deliberation, has an immediate relative, a cousin who is gay, who will be in the audience. That's an interesting fact. It's certainly legitimate to report it. It demonstrates that it's an experience that many, many Americans have, you know, where their traditions might conflict with the reality of their life
right.
and the people that they are related to and who they love and who they are friends with, et cetera, et cetera.
30 seconds.
What is this, the McLaughlin Group now?
If we're going to hit news, I got 30 seconds.
Let's have a brilliant sum up here.
All right, now 10 seconds.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You want to just wait till later?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I have something to say.
All right. Hold that thought. We're going to be back. We're going to take an NPR news break. We'll be back after this short break, and Alan will share some thoughts with you. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On the Roundtable, I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here. Alan Chartok is here. And Mike Spain is here, the associate editor of the Times Union. And it's a pleasure. And, you know I tell you this in emails and so forth, but the fact that you take time out of your day to come here and do this, I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
I was speaking to Mike. You guys are getting
work here.
Unlike.
Oh, well, and you're not welcome.
Unlike us, Mike isn't getting paid to do this. So. It is, we always want to hear from you, of course, and you can certainly email us roundtable@wamc.org or use any social media of your choice. Let us talk about an issue that it's one of those things that just, I think, kind of makes you mad. At least it made me mad, and you just wonder what's going on. And then, depending where you are on the issue, maybe you turn around and you say, well, it's probably that liberal media stirring things up and just making hay out of nothing. All right. So two senators in the state of Connecticut have come out and said that the National Rifle Association has stooped to a new low in making robocalls to residents of Newtown, Connecticut. The two U.S. senators from Connecticut argued in a letter to the NRA on Monday, "We call on you to immediately stop calling the families and friends of the victims in Newtown." Reports emerged last week of Newtown residents receiving robocalls urging them to stand against state legislative attempts to pass stricter gun laws, including more expansive assault weapons ban and 10-round limit for magazines. Asked for a recording of the call, the NRA declined to provide the audio but released a statement defending the calls. Quote, "The National Rifle Association has members, contributors, and supporters in Connecticut who expect us to do our jobs and keep them abreast of the developments on the legislative front in their state." The NRA's Director of Public Affairs said in a statement about the calls, "We provide the same service for our members and supporters all around the country." Of course, the calls come a little more than 3 months after a gunman massacred 20 children and 6 adults at an elementary school in that town of Newtown, in addition to shooting his mother before killing himself. So there's the political issue, of course, for the senators getting involved in this, but then there is the larger point of, you know, how could this possibly look good for the NRA?
Well, it seems like it's a public relations debacle, but the NRA continues to have a single voice and be provocative even a week after Newtown. Ray LaPierre was talking about, arming school teachers, and if good people had guns in schools on that day in Newtown, it would have had a different outcome. They seem to be really single-minded and able to continue to do this. Now, over the weekend, we learned that Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, is ponying up $12 million of his own money to try to counteract that. And maybe that's what's really going on. They're trying to get out in front of the public relations, the publicity campaign, the political campaign that's now underway in America over whether or not we should have restrictions on guns and, assault weapons, ammunition, and certainly do background checks.
But is the question, what impact will those calls have on those people in Newtown who are receiving them? Or is the question, and of course we can't assign a motive to this, but where the NRA says, okay, but by doing this, we will get publicity nationwide, and look at it as an issue of we are standing up for the rights, even for the people in Newtown.
I think that it was a PR mistake. I mean, look, there are many, 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 many Americans who say this is a good and noble organization. However, I can't find a gun owner that I know who says, oh, great idea. Call the folks in Newtown. Brilliant. You can do a campaign, and if what Mike says is correct, in countering Bloomberg's $12 million, great. That's what you do. Do it. Maybe don't do it in Newtown.
They could have. I mean, computers are amazing, and they could have deselected all the Newtown phone numbers. So to do this knowingly, knowing that they would be reaching the homes of people who've lost children and knew the victims of Newtown. It just seems crass and unnecessary.
Well, and this is, I mean, certainly the statement indicates that A, it was intentional, and B, that they have no remorse for it. The National Rifle Association has members, contributors, and supporters throughout Connecticut who expect us to do our jobs and keep them abreast of developments on the legislative front in their state. So they're, you know, boom.
Well, I mean, I think Ray's right. It's kind of an in-your-face kind of thing. You know, it's not shirking the their what they regard as a responsibility. It's putting it out there in the most pugnacious way.
Yeah, you could be a little more sensitive, I think, and you'd gain some or gain less disfavor, perhaps.
Well, you know, you got how many guns in the United States? 300 million, something like that. I think it's one for every. Averaging, of course, I don't have a gun, but one for
not
every,
with you.
No, I have no gun.
Okay, all
right.
Stick to that story.
One for every one of us, theoretically. So a lot of people have two and three, and therefore, you got a lot of people who side with the pro gun group. It's to my mind awful. But
why? Yeah.
Because I think we have too many guns. We have too much killing. We know that in domestic situations, if a gun is handy, somebody grabs a gun when they could have done something else, which would have not let somebody dead on the floor. What do you mean? When you say I see that
no,
way.
I see, but I think the NRA
it's a sort
is
of condescending sort of I see.
You're talking largely about illegal guns, of which there are millions. This is not what the NRA is talking about here.
What'd you say?
You're talking about illegal guns, of which there are millions. This is
not
what the NRA is talking
legal
about
guns.
Here.
Somebody has a legal gun in their house. They get into
locked
a fight.
Locked up in a
or
safe.
Not locked, or not locked up, where a kid finds it and or a kid's friend finds it and shoots somebody with
I
it.
See.
We see it when you say, I see. I know that I see. It's a condescending I
no,
see, and
not,
I resent
sir.
It more
it
than I can
not.
Say. Yes.
Continue.
I've already said what I
right,
had to say.
Fine. All right. Let me get back to the issue at hand, which is when we talk about the robocalls, does it hurt... As Mike mentioned, you have now we're looking to advance legislation in the Senate, and Michael Bloomberg has gotten this is going to put up money. The NRA obviously is ready for a fight. So the question becomes: Does this just the fact that we're talking about this story and that this has become a major story in the press? Hurt the NRA at all, because they seem to be somewhat Teflon when it comes to these issues.
Yeah, Teflon's a good word, because it seems no matter how many people criticize them when just last week Harry Reid kind of backed off a bill that would limit assault weapons. So it seems like they've already convinced the leaders of the Congress that that will never pass and that they ought to back off and just work on, background checks.
And here in New York State, of course, we know that Governor Cuomo is backing off just a little bit in terms of these magazines and how many bullets and the rest. And obviously he's been stung far worse than I think he thought he would be.
Right. If New York,
although
had
he did
not,
the right thing,
if New York had not passed that so quickly, and they got a lot of criticism for making it,
and not waiting the 3 days,
right? Not waiting the 3 days, waiving the 3 days, and passing it quickly, there likely would be those same robocalls here, and maybe the NRA is trying to prevent any kind of quick decisions while people are still, I guess, emotionally affected by Newtown, and they're trying to let all the politicians know that they'll pay if they go ahead and pass it.
And by the way, it's working.
Yeah, it
does. It's working. In other words, the further away you get from Newtown, the polls are reflecting that people are less for gun control than they were.
Well, and that's why I asked initially about the long-term, the geographical ramifications of this, that for those that aren't in Newtown that hear about these calls, are there a segment of NRA members that are going to say, that's disgusting, I hate this, I'm going to rip up my card and send it back to you, or are there people saying, you know, good for you, we have to stand up for this issue, and that's a good thing?
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying both.
A little bit of both.
Sure. Very well put.
It'll embolden those who are firm on asserting your Second Amendment rights or what they're perceived to be and how they interpret them. And it will offend people who just are already offended.
Oh,
by
I know that, but I'm talking about NRA members.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, specifically NRA members.
And I think we should make the point that while there may be 300 million gun owners, they are not by any means all NRA members. They're not. And for some of the very reasons we're talking about.
Well, have you seen the prototype ad that Bloomberg is intending to
yes.
put on the airwaves? I mean, it's a rifle owner who you know owns owns a rifle legally and is proud of that, but then is disgusted by what the NRA is doing. And you know, I think that there will be some kind of a wider split. You know, I'm wondering if there'll be like an alt NRA, you know, another organization that would represent gun owners that wouldn't be as militant about, you know, being able to own assault weapons and own giant magazines that let you, that would let somebody, fire hundreds of rounds of ammunition in a minute. It seems like there's probably a difference between the guy who goes deer hunting with his buddies and somebody who's got assault weapons. I don't know. You know.
Well, yes, absolutely. I want to talk real quick about one issue, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back and finish up. And that is a political issue. There was an NPR story yesterday. Obviously, this comes out of two major speeches that were made last week. One, Rand Paul making a speech on immigration, and then Hillary Clinton's a marriage equality speech, and now. Political observers saying, well, okay, this is clear, is making it clearer that these are two people who are very much looking to run for political office or at least testing the waters by these speeches. So obviously when it's we are 1,323 days away from the election.
What was that now?
1,323 days.
Oh, good heavens.
But it's never too early, is it?
No.
So when you look at that, but we sort of knew this, didn't we? I mean, we knew that Rand Paul was thinking.
Yeah.
We knew that Hillary Clinton was thinking about it. So
you're seeing some repositioning. I think you should make it clear what the President Clinton and Mrs. Clinton thought about gay marriage before he signed
the Supreme Court tomorrow is going to be taking up the argument about DOMA, the Defense of the Marriage Act, which was signed by
Bill Clinton,
William Jefferson Clinton. So, but he regrets that.
He regrets it, and she is changing her mind. Listen, we saw Senator Gillibrand, who represented an upstate district, and I remember Chuck Schumer in announcing her, and they all said, well, she's so conservative on guns and this and that and the other thing, and he said, she'll evolve.
And she has evolved. Well, Rand Paul is evolving on the issue of immigration, which is making him more acceptable. But the polls are showing that unless the Republican Party opens their tent to Hispanics and others from who are first generation immigrants, they're not going to even have a chance in 2016. Yeah. So this is the beginning of the evolution that you're talking about.
Yes.
Is Rand Paul a viable candidate?
No.
Why?
Well, he's viable as far as I'm concerned, because if they run him, they're going to lose bad.
1,323 days is a long time.
Yes, it is, sir.
A lot can happen. It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, people who are on top will be off the—
Maybe I have a strange view of this, but it seems to me when we're talking about the leader of a country that working this all out over a period of time and having discussions. And I understand, you know, the horse race aspect of it goes on too long. Okay, fine. But, you know, these town meetings that are going on at different places, and if people really want to be a part of that democratic institution and listen to what the people have to say and go to C-SPAN and the road to the White House,
sure.
I don't know. I'm all for that. I mean, the more I hear, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
You're not nearly as cynical as many of us.
That's true. Although I always thought he was. But,
He is.
I am cynical, but I like that. I mean, part of it, I think we're all political animals. We like this stuff, so it's fun to listen to. But also, I mean, is making a decision for the reasons Alan just mentioned. I mean, we want to see these people evolve. We want to see what happens. We want to see what goes on, and we don't know that unless we're paying attention.
I mean, don't you want to see the Republican Party succeed? Otherwise, it'll be You know, if it's just one party dominating everything, regardless of which party it is, that's not healthy. I mean, you need a viable Republican Party.
We have certainly seen the Democratic Party in complete disarray. We have seen the Republican Party in complete disarray, and watching these machinations go on is, I mean, it's all part of the political process and evolution
and the evolutionary process.
But I think as an informed electorate, now I'm not saying everyone does this. But the fact that we have these speeches, that we have these town meetings, that in town halls in Iowa and Ohio and New Hampshire, that these are taking place, I mean, that strikes me as a good thing and not something to be taken lightly, even though that it's you know, 1,300 days away.
And you know what I love? I love the fact that people think that they're on the side which they will get the most votes. And all of a sudden, the great monster reaches up and bites them in the behind. And they say, oh, my God, it turns out that Hillary has changed, Bill has changed, the President of the United States, Barack Obama,
has evolved
on that. And you're standing out there with your thumb up in the air.
It's fascinating stuff. We're going to continue our conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about technology as we wrap up this hour of the program. We'd love to hear from you, as always. Join us, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, our Facebook page, or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Our roundtable on the roundtable continues after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable on the Roundtable. Coming up later in the show, in our 11 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking to a gentleman by the name of Douglas Rushkoff. He is the author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now. He is a media theorist. Yes, a media theorist. And he teaches at NYU and the New School and has written this book. It is fairly fascinating. There was a story about it on All Things Considered last night. And as they pointed out in the story, many of us say that we're slaves to our phones or to our computers, and we know what that means. But the question of why are we allowing ourselves to be slaves to the very instruments of technology that we have created? And Rushkoff says that it's time for people to stop chasing every ping and start using technology in a way that makes us feel more free. And basically what he's saying is that this present shock is the human response to living in a world that's always on real time and simultaneous. In some ways, it's the impact of living in a digital environment. In other ways, it's just really what happens when you stop leaning so forward to the millennium and you've finally arrived there. He calls this digiphrenia, which is the experience of trying to exist in more than one incarnation of yourself at the same time. So there is our Twitter profile, our Facebook profile, our email inbox, and all these sorts of multiple instances of us, and they're operating simultaneously and in parallel, and that's not a very comfortable position for most human beings to be.
Well, it's just the way it is. In other words, it may not be nice. And I know a whole lot of people who are giving up their Facebook pages right now because they're disgusted with the fact that there's just too much information about things that they don't think is important. But most people aren't. And so it's a reality. So he can say tisk tisk, but the fact of the matter is it's here.
Well, he compares it in his interview with being, you know, a ping on your smartphone as being like a roulette machine in Las Vegas. You check your email box, and most of the time it's worthless, meaningless. It's advertising. Sure. It's someone you don't want to hear from. It's your boss telling you got to do something, whatever. Yeah. But it might be some really great email that somebody is sending you who you want to hear from. So you're excited for a moment and you want to check it. And it's Pavlovian.
Wait. Just one thing. It's a little disassociated. But did you just say you get things from your boss saying that you were doing things that they didn't want you to do?
Well, no, Alan. Sometimes, though, that we do communicate by email and you find out tasks that are required. And I'm just saying that in general.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought you had him there. It was a Mike Wallace moment, eh?
Yeah, it seemed. Suddenly we're at the slaughterhouse.
Exactly. It was an anecdote. Down, boy.
It was an anecdote, Rex.
Oh my! But that whole point if we're always on and we're always trapped in the present, then you know then what do you, then how do you plan for the future? Because you're not, you know, you're always engaged with what is going on at that moment.
Well, do you completely unplug when you're on vacation or when you're off?
No.
Do you wish you could?
Yes.
I mean, you know, some researchers went on a trip down some river in Utah last year and wrote a great piece about it. They were in areas where they just could not be plugged in.
Well, I live in one of those areas.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, some would say you have a big advantage, you know.
Well, it's true.
It's healthy.
You know, I was away for, three or four days, and I decided for the first time in all of these years not to do that 7:30 commentary that I usually do. And it was so liberating. I can't tell you. I loved it. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, people have to learn how to manage these, you know, these, I guess, urges to check your email constantly and check your Twitter feed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as you say, Alan, some people are dropping their Facebook pages. They're kind of, it's finding out what the kid who went to kindergarten with you is doing these days and reading his sort of opus on life. You know, that's not that interesting, I guess.
And the Facebook people are to blame because they keep making it harder to narrow down what you're getting on your Facebook page. All I want to do is hear about my kids.
Well, you could do that.
You just don't friend people.
But if I don't friend people, no, they walk up to me as they one recently did, whispers in my ear, pretends to be giving me a hug, a wealthy woman in the Berkshires, and calls me an SOB because I didn't friend her.
Well, friend her, but block her posts.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Easy as can be.
Yeah, that's,
you can customize.
We can work with you
on
that. Yeah.
That's very easy. I mean, you know.
I know, and I do it.
You know, and you do. You make it what you want to make out of it. But it's. But I think it's interesting about because I do think that he's right in the sense of that we do have these different personalities. There's sort of like our Twitter personality. There's our Facebook personality. There's our email personality, and then there's us.
Well,
and where are we in that?
I think Alan's right, and I think Mike is right. I think Alan's right. There's no escaping it.
Right.
But I think to some extent it is evolving. It'll become more streamlined and personalized, and people will get it in proper perspective. It's new. You know, even if it's 20 years old, it's new. And we'll all get it in perspective right for us. So Alan will block the lady who he doesn't like. You will have perhaps more venues. I will have less. It'll all work out. It's a brave new world.
It's not the end of the world.
No.
Absolutely. It's our present
the beginning.
Shock. And we'll talk to Douglas Rushkoff coming up
and it's our politics
later
too.
On in the program. What would you
it's
say?
It's our politics also because you see these revolutions that are centered on Twitter. You mean that's the way the information's getting out. Certainly ain't the press.
No, and it's a large part of the way we communicate now, and we certainly can't. We can't ignore it, and I find it difficult to believe that this wasn't. You know, we say this about any. Don't we have these arguments on any new technology? I mean, we talked about this. The telephone. We talked about this in email. We talked about. I mean, you were talking about that ping is sort of like the roulette wheel, but that ping to me is also kind of like the front door, the doorbell going.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the doorbell or the phone ringing during dinner. It's that kind of thing.
Sure.
Alan, was it like this when movies started?
No, it was. I remember. Now, remember, I was born in 1941.
Okay.
Carbon paper and stuff like that.
No, they were talkies at that point. They just weren't. You had to go to Kansas.
Yeah.
I remember when they got color.
Yeah, but not until after the tornado.
Now, newspapers have color.
Yes. And beautiful,
and
crisp,
what a
beautiful
plug
color.
That was.
But what is a newspaper?
TimesUnion.com if you want to see one and see their online version. And you can pick up a copy. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the newspaper. And it's always a pleasure to have him join us on this panel. Mike, thank you very much as always.
You're absolutely welcome. Happy to be here.
Thanks also to Alan and Ray. And gentlemen, we'll talk again later in the week.